Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes. Let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a
creepy way. Hey. Hello, this is brother Jay.
This is still Drew.
And tonight we are going to be talking about the 2017 Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
For the fourth time.
Nobody needs to know about all our technical difficulties. Something was not cooperating, so we're having some trying times. So Brother E will chuckle at this, as we've given him like 17 files now to try and splice together.
Yes, and splice he will. I'm sure he'll make something good out of this soup.
So I will say that my introduction to this was boyfriend Jesse and I went and saw this pretty sure opening weekend at the movie theater since I was such a big fan of the first movie. So how did you come to see it the first time?
This is a movie I was looking forward to, but was not one that made me rush out to the theater. So I waited till it came out on video, watched it in the comfort of my own home.
Oh.
Which is great, because one of the best parts of this movie, which is no shade, maybe a little bit of shade, is the music video that you can find on the Blu-ray. I assume you watched it.
I have not.
Oh. The music video is pretty sweet.
Okay. I'll have to go watch it. I did watch to the end of the credits, but I did not watch the music video. I haven't watched many of the special features. Because I was not a big fan of this movie.
No?
No.
So you thought it was a pretty big letdown after the first one then?
This movie had some problems. And I was telling boyfriend Jesse on rewatch. My problem with it is that about every other 10 minutes was unnecessary or silly. I had a really hard time with the running gags that were trying so hard to be funny, but just were painfully not funny to me. They were so transparent, they weren't even... The first movie I thought was witty. This wasn't witty as much as it was pandering. And I think that's what really kind of distracted me.
Hmm.
The action was good, and some of the story was good, but then they would have, you know... Spoilerific, by the way, so we're going to spoil everything here. So go watch it if you haven't, and then come back and tell me I'm wrong. The whole with, it's not ripe yet. The fruit's not ripe yet. Oh, is that going to be a joke? Like, that's a thing. So that's the kind of thing that just kept coming up, that it wasn't necessary. It didn't make the movie any funnier. The movie didn't need that kind of levity.
This movie... tried a couple times to be subtle, like the whole ripe fruit thing.
That was subtle.
Well, yeah, I mean, like it. Well, here's a counterexample: the taser face bit. I thought that was very funny.
Did you?
Yeah, and not that it was clever or witty, but Bradley Cooper's delivery as Rocket, I thought was hilarious.
And Bradley Cooper does a great job as Rocket. I love almost all of Rocket. He's probably one of my most favorite characters. My problem was, is much like a Saturday Night Live skit, it went on too long. It just was too much. It was, you know, it would have been cute and funny a little bit, but it was just way too long.
Yeah, this was a long movie. I was surprised at how long it was when I started watching it.
It was only 2 hours, 2 hours four, right?
Yeah, but that's a long movie for kind of a silly silly sci-fi comedy.
Yeah. And then, you know, there were some other things, the very cliche, like, look, I'm playing ball with dad.
Yeah, I mean, that was a little saccharine.
Yeah, a little pandering. But look, don't get me wrong. Kurt Russell, what's not to like about Kurt Russell, even though he turns out to be the devil? You know, and all the regulars, even with the creepy mantis who they introduce. But I don't know. It was silly without adding anything to the story, to me. So
Kurt Russell is so good. Just like, he has so much charisma. And he, like, even though he's old now, he's still, like, so good looking that even though he does turn out to be the bad guy and has, like, one of the most ridiculous villain plots ever, I was still kind of on his side.
He's kind of like Sam Elliott. He's just got that ruggedness.
Yeah, and you just want to buy whatever he's selling, no matter what it is. Even when he drops the bomb, just kind of casually, like yeah, that's why I had to put that tumor in your mom's head. You're like, all right, Kurt Russell, I guess that seems reasonable.
He's a deity. He's like, mm-hmm. I gotta do what I gotta do. I gotta make things and undo the universe and all this. We're just waiting for, like, Alanis Morissette to show up and set everything right.
Yeah.
That was a Dogma reference. So.
Yeah, I got it.
I was calling it out for the audience. I knew you would get it. We I think we tortured you by making you watch it. So.
Yeah, I've seen that movie a couple times.
So I guess we'll start. How about we start with the plot?
I have a couple questions to ask you about the beginning of this movie.
Sure.
What did you think of the de-aging effect they had for Kurt Russell in the very beginning?
It worked. I'm assuming it was largely some kind of CGI-ing.
Mm-hmm.
Much like the Nicole Kidman in Aquaman.
Oh, I haven't seen that one.
Ah.
They did this a few years earlier with the Tron sequel. They did it for Jeff Bridges, and that looked terrible. I thought this looked pretty good, and they get better. They do something similar for Michael Douglas in Ant-Man and Robert Downey Jr. in one of the Avengers movies. And they're certainly getting better. The Captain Marvel movie coming out, they've done it for Sam Jackson, and the trailers for that look, the effects look really good. So I thought this was okay.
Yeah, it was fine. I mean, you're so distracted by everything else that's going on in that car that and his jacket. So there's plenty of things to distract you on purpose, I'm sure. The hair helped, you know, the fake big hair covers up a great many sins.
Yeah, that was amazing hair.
Yeah, too bad it wasn't real.
What did you think of the opening credits sequence?
It was fine. It was, you know, it worked.
I liked it. I thought it was well done. It was a good introduction to Baby Groot. And I like when stories take like the standard action set piece that you're anticipating, and they find a more interesting way to do it. And they did that with this movie by kind of focusing on what Baby Groot was doing and having all the action for the most part in the background.
Yeah, they very much treated the action as kind of a distraction to the main feature, which was Baby Groot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that was quite fun.
So this movie was 137 minutes long, according to Wikipedia. Budgeted for $200 million, not surprising. Box office, $863 million domestic. That's a pretty nice return.
Yeah, that's a hit.
Yeah. Well, there may eventually be a third one. We'll see. There's some dispute. So, not the least of which is the fact that James Gunn was fired by Disney. I know they've been shopping it around, but since he wrote, ostensibly, I believe he wrote the screenplay for the third one, a lot of directors won't touch it because they're like, I'm not going to, that's like sleeping with some other dude's wife, which, you know, it's Hollywood. Why everybody does that. But I guess a lot of people are just really uncomfortable and don't have any interest in picking up the mantle because it would feel weird to them. Although I imagine somebody will have their price met. I also was interested to find out in doing some research that Yondu's second in command, Kraglin, is played by James Gunn's brother.
Yeah.
So yeah, and I think Dave Bautista, I think it was he that stated that if James Gunn didn't come back, he wasn't coming back.
Yep.
So, but at any rate, this movie takes place clearly after the end of the previous movie, but we don't know how long exactly. As mentioned, the opening sequence is they're fighting some kind of weird multi-tentacled, multi-mouthed, gross creature. And Baby Groot is having a good old time doing what he does, grooting it up. But then as it turns out, the sole purpose for this is that they're protecting the Sovereign's magic super batteries. The Sovereign are a strange race who seem to have a strange society where they're super conceited and take insults very seriously, but also run their military through the use of video games.
Mm-hmm.
Very arcade-like.
Yeah, the queen or the head sovereign is played by Elizabeth Debicki from The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
I couldn't place her.
Yeah, she's the super tall blonde. She was one of the main bad guys in Man from U.N.C.L.E.
I thought she did a great job. She's very unlikable.
Yes, she is.
And supposedly the third story is largely involving her and the male counterpart to her. But who knows what's actually going to happen. But we digress. Through some loveliness of Rocket and his kleptomania, turns out that he has stolen some of the very magic batteries that the Sovereign were trying to protect. And so the Sovereign send out forces to attack them to teach them a lesson, and hijinks ensue. They have a pretty good space combat scene where some childish bickering turns into accident and they end up crash landing on a nearby planet. At which point, it turns out Ego shows up, and Ego turns out to be Peter's father. Dun, dun, dun. And there's this strange kind of, I don't know. Okay, let's go. And so Gamora and Peter and Drax go back with Ego and Mantis, while Rocket and Baby Groot stay with Nebula, who is now prisoner, to repair the ship that they crash landed on the planet.
I love listening to you trying to describe this nonsense.
I don't think it's nonsense.
It's a silly plot.
It is a pretty silly plot.
It's a pretty contrived conceit to split up the Guardians. But you know, I'm okay with some of the results of it, because Rocket really gets sort of his own story for a while, which is my favorite part of the movie. Because it turns out Rocket is not only this like super smart engineer, but he is also a badass when he's in a fight.
He's a ninja.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, he's too cocky for his own good.
Well, he's also outnumbered like, what, like 500 to 1.
Yeah. You know, he certainly did better than I would do, but but yeah, there's some story choices. There was no need for them to split up. Why wouldn't they all go with Ego? They could come back and fix the ship later. if they decided to.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty to go around. So I think the premise was that they were going to deliver Nebula to
Glenn Close.
Yeah, I just forgot the.
You can't remember the made up fictional alien race.
Yeah. Not the Zandarians, right?
Nah, that sounds close.
Anyway.
Unless that's a race from Buck Rogers.
It could be both.
Yeah, Xandar.
Is that what it says?
Xandar was the planet.
All right. So the premise, I believe, was that they were going to the Sovereign were going to deliver Nebula to the Guardians if the Guardians protect the batteries. And the Guardians were then going to deliver Nebula to the Xandarians for whatever.
Her bounty, yeah.
Although it's unsure why it's her bounty. I mean, I guess she was in cahoots to try and destroy the planet. But now Nebula seems to have a vendetta where she wants to...
Generally, she's while working for Thanos, she's murdered a lot of people.
This is true. She's kind of a mercenary, though. She's kill anybody.
Yeah.
I don't think she doesn't have any, no bones to pick. She's like, nah, just kill everybody. It's just easier. Lost my place. Let's see. So Ego and Quill and Gamora and Drax go to the home planet. Rocket and Groot stay behind to fix the ship and guard Nebula. Aisha, who is the Sovereign leader, hires Yondu and his crew to recapture them and chase after them to get Quill back and the batteries back. Although I think the batteries are probably incidental to them.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, they're just ticked off and one of them dead.
Yeah, and in the middle of then they have that scene. I guess earlier they have the scene, that terrible, god-awful scene with Sylvester Stallone.
Sylvester Stallone in this movie was rough.
He's had a few head injuries too many, I think.
Yeah, it seemed like he had no idea what the hell was going on.
No.
Like he was not committing to the role.
I don't think he understood the role, which, you know, I don't know. I'm no actor. I can't tell you, but I don't know. He was very distracting. Not in a good way. Not in a creepy way, but not in a good way. I don't know. I don't know who else I would have cast in that role, but I don't know. This is anybody. Daniel Craig.
It just seemed like every time they yelled cut, he probably turned around and was like, what the fuck is this? I'm going to fire my agent.
So... he and Yondu have a falling out. Yondu takes a bounty for the Guardians from Aisha. So they travel across to go and find him. But then Taserface helps up an uprising and mutiny. And eventually Kraglin and Taserface kind of end up taking over the ship with Taserface in charge. And all the bad people end up out the airlock, bad people being the people who are probably going to be loyal to Yondu, which is kind of a jarring bit of business.
Yeah, that's really dark.
It was super dark.
Yeah, especially for anybody who was a fan of Sons of Anarchy, because the one they focus on throwing out the airlock was Chibs from Sons of Anarchy, a beloved character.
I have not seen Sons of Anarchy, so...
The first three seasons are great.
How many seasons were there?
Six or seven?
Ooh, six. But just the first three?
Four is okay.
It got sticky.
There's a precipitous drop off towards the end.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Taserface, mutiny.
Oh, Henry Rollins is like one of the worst villains ever in season two of Sons of Anarchy.
Oh, poor Hank. That makes me sad.
Yes, he is not very nice to Peggy Bundy.
Oh, I forgot she was in it. That is a good role for her, right?
Oh, she was great.
Yeah, Katie Sagal, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She did a lot of music in that, too.
Oh, she's really quite a great actress, so.
Mm-hmm. She did a really haunting version of Bird on a Wire.
Ooh. I have a bad association with Bird on a Wire because I just have the Neville Brothers in my head singing it repeatedly from the time when I worked at a movie theater and Bird on a Wire with Goldie Hawn and Mel Gibson played over and over and over and over and over and over. So, which, by the way, was a terrible movie.
I happened to catch that on TV.
Oh, no.
In the last couple of years, I saw part of it.
No.
It was kind of like watching, I don't know if you've ever done this, like gotten nostalgic and be like, oh, I used to love He-Man, the He-Man cartoon. Look, it's on whatever, Netflix or Hulu. I'm going to watch an episode. And you watch it and it's like, this is nonsense. How did this make sense to me when I was a little kid? Watching that movie.
How did I repeatedly sit through this?
Yeah. Like, no, was there any continuity check for anybody working on Thundar the Barbarian? Come on.
Ookless, just a Chewbacca ripoff.
Oh, jeez. That is a deep, deep pull.
I remember, I digged Thundar the Barbarian.
I loved it. And then I saw one later. And I was like, this makes absolutely no sense. There's no way to follow this plot.
Hmm. Unlike this movie where the plot is just linear. Yes, I've had similar experiences where I've gone back and I'm like, oh, I should watch this. And then I watch it and I'm like, ooh, yikes. I need to spend a long time again before I watch this again.
Yeah.
Most of those are late 80s, early 90s, as it turns out. Where the humor was just so bad. And, you know, The Christmas Vacation, like Lampoon's Vacation, Christmas Vacation was kind of that way. It was rough. You know, it was funny at the time because we didn't know any better. And it goes for that low-hanging fruit humor. But once you've seen it, it's like cheap bubble gum. Like you've chewed it once and there's no flavor left. So you go back and it's like, oh, it doesn't taste like anything. It's like fruit stripe gum, you know.
I still have a place in my heart for fruit stripe gum.
Oh, me too.
For the first three chews.
I still buy it every now and then. That was a treat growing up. So.
Oh, yeah.
Because we weren't allowed sugared gum.
Yeah. And now I am such a monster, I have a no-gum household.
Oh, is this from a poor experience or is this just preventative?
It's like 80% misophonia, 10% OCD, and 10% teaching of manners.
Gotcha.
But mostly any sound of chewing is that's a no. That's going to be a no.
I understand.
Not ever. No, not acceptable.
I understand. I understand. I'm not. I don't want to put myself in the doghouse, so I'm going to skip the conversation. I'm just going to have it inside my head. But at work, because I've switched.
That always makes for a good podcast experience.
Yes, but you know. Happy spouse, happy life, right? So,
mm-hmm.
Since I've started the intermittent fasting, mm-hmm. We're on a tangent. Brother E would be proud of us. The intermittent fasting. So to trick myself, I chew gum in the mornings because otherwise I will just eat my desk. So, I have supplemented it with three different flavors of chewing gum, and as long as I keep chewing. I'm okay, but I usually chew for about 10 minutes and spit it out, and then I'll go back an hour later and chew for another 10 minutes. But what I learned not to do a couple weeks ago is I had to go to the car dealership and I had to spend a couple hours there, which is its own like seventh circle of hell. And to keep myself from yelling and coming unhinged, I just kept chewing gum, which in retrospect, the migraine I had the next day would inform me that perhaps chewing gum for 3 hours straight is not really good for my jaw muscles and not good for my head. So not a good stress aversion technique, as it turns out.
Yeah, that, especially that anger chew.
Oh, yeah.
really gets your temples throbbing.
Oh, yeah. It was, No, I was feeling it the next day and the day after. So, that's good. That's fun. Anywho, back to the movie. So Taserface Mutiny.
After a badass scene from Rocket.
Rocket has the nice forest scene, so here's where I'm saying like every other 10 minutes of this movie was good. The action scene was great up until the trampoline people. That was just like, it was over the top, and I don't know. It didn't make me laugh. I was just like, oh, you're just pandering.
Yeah. They had a camera effect they wanted to hit.
Yeah, clearly. So that's fine. Whatever. Yeah. It looked good, but no, the warfare and the weapons and his technique, his karate, his ninja moves. No, it was Rocket's the man, or the rodent, or whatever raccoons are. Are they rodentia? I don't know.
Trash panda.
Trash pandas, yes.
It's worse. It's way worse.
Trash pandas are?
Yeah. Sorry. That's what Quill said.
Ah, I gotcha. You are correct. I like raccoons. I think they're adorable. But like squirrels, they're adorable in somebody else's yard.
Mm-hmm.
In my yard, they're yeah, that's grounds for termination. So they have the nice forest combat scene. But as it turns out, Yondu? So the fight happens before the mutiny then. Because Yondu's like, ha ha ha, I got you. And then he and Rocket end up on the ship. And then Taserface in the mutiny. And then Yondu and Rocket end up in the brig on the ship. After Yondu has his little headgear unceremoniously stripped in a kind of a frighteningly...
Yeah, Nebula shot that off in the forest. That's what ended that confrontation.
Yeah, I was a little nervous when that happened.
Yeah, this movie went a long way to redeem Yondu.
Yeah, and it was an unfortunate thing that they had to kill him off, because I think it would have been nice to see him in a third movie in a redemptive state.
Yeah. Because I'm pretty sure in the comic books, he eventually joins the Guardians of the Galaxy.
And that would have been nice. But I'm supposing at some point you can't pay all the stars all the money, so.
I don't know. Is Michael Rooker really breaking the bank?
Oh, probably not. But I imagine by the time he hits a third movie, his numbers go up.
Yeah.
Just a guess. Although, maybe Dave Bautista might. I don't know. Anyway. Mutiny, and then as it turns out, they decide, Rocket and Yondu decide they're going to team up and get Baby Groot to help them escape, recapture the ship, and go find Quill. And so there's some revenge-y scenes, but in the meantime, Ico and Peter and Gamora and Drax and Mantis go back to the home, Ego's home planet. Does the home planet have a name? I don't think it's ever named.
It's Ego.
Is it?
Yeah, Ego is the planet.
Isn't Ego also the man?
Yeah, they're the same thing.
Oh, all right. So they go back to the planet. Ego shows Peter the powers that he could have. And they have this cloyingly saccharine, as you described, scene where they're playing ball with energy. and Ego is trying to win Peter over to the Ego side. Mantis kind of hints that things are not quite what they should be to Drax, but she seems intimidated by Gamora, so there's some reticence to share the information. There's a little bit of like back and forth, you know, some dramatic tension. Peter's like, you just don't want me to have a family, to Gamora, all that typical sitcom-y kind of plot manipulation that happens.
And then speaking of family, Nebula shows up for a pretty brutal fight scene. I actually like this action scene quite a bit.
Yeah, again, every other 10 minutes. So you're talking about the Nebula and Gamora fight?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, it was great.
That was some pretty stunningly good action.
Mm-hmm. And humor.
Yeah, and anytime you get to see two women that are kicking ass on screen, I'm all for that.
Yeah, and then you get Nebula's heartbreaking revelation that she just wanted a sister.
Right. So teach your daughters well. Also, the fact that every time that Gamora would win, Thanos would punish Nebula by removing another piece of her humanity and supplementing it with computers and artificial intelligence and cyborg implants. Yeah. So it makes you wonder how much Nebula is machine and how much it is Superwoman.
She's mostly machine at this point.
A point that's made because she seems pretty impervious to dying.
Yeah, and there's that great effect when she's kind of all broken after the space crash, and then her body just repairs itself in that like herky jerky fashion.
Yes,
that was a pretty good effect.
The noises, that was in the first movie too.
I didn't remember it there. Yeah, the whole Thanos, Nebula, Gamora sort of family unit, that really has a quite strong emotional payoff in the latest Avengers movie.
Because Thanos isn't really their biological father, correct? They're correct. Kidnapped?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was trying to explain that to boyfriend Jessica because I was like, I'm pretty sure if I remember, they're not blood. They're just stolen and then used as Thanos' amusements.
Yeah, he essentially raised henchmen.
Yeah. Which, and they both know it.
Yeah, they don't like the guy.
No. He's a pretty terrible guy. Mm-hmm. He doesn't make any appearance in this movie.
No.
I wonder how terrible comic booky he's going to be in the third movie.
I don't think he'll be in the third movie.
I'm not sure anybody's going to be in the third movie.
Yeah. But if you watch Avengers, one of the things that makes Thanos a good villain is he kind of has a point.
Okay. I will look forward to watching. So, back on planet Ego, turns out Ego has some pretty evil plans where he's been seeding all of the planets in the, I want to say universe, but I don't even think that's big enough. But everywhere that existence is, he's been seeding
himself.
Himself?
It's gross. Yeah. When you say it out loud, it's gross.
Yeah. Apparently he's blue goo.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been seeding himself because what he wants to do is he wants to make the entire everywhere him. Which I don't understand. I don't... This is where I get lost. Like, I don't understand the whole point of this. Like, why? What to what end? What does this do for him? He's everything?
He wants to be bigger than a planet. He wants to be the universe.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the most ridiculous supervillainy plot ever.
Yeah, it's kind of a little overreach. But anyway, you know, villains are not known for their smarts, right? So,
really makes Goldfinger look like an amateur.
Makes most of the Bond villains look like amateurs. Well, hell, they're only struck to a planet.
Yeah.
Ego is a planet, so. But Ego tries to convince Peter that the way is the way and Peter should join him. And then when Peter's like, nope, Ego's like, yep, you're going to do this.
Quill decides no once he finds out that Ego actually murdered his mother.
Yeah. Broke my heart to put that tumor in her head. But you knew that. I mean, you knew that. Oh, at least I shouldn't say you knew that. I figured that going into it, that that's what had happened before I ever knew the story.
Yeah, I had assumed that he was the cause of the cancer.
Yeah, me too. I just didn't know he had intentionally
put it in. Yeah, I didn't expect it to be intentional because he didn't want a temptation.
Yeah, he didn't want to be stuck on Earth as immortal, which he intimated that if he had stayed on Earth, he would have remained immortal. But I don't know. This is a planet, right? In the meantime, Rocket and Yondu, with Baby Groot's help, break out of the brig and pretty much commit genocide on the rest of the crew, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of murdering.
Yeah. In an interesting little choreographed bit where you see Yondu's super arrow going through this strange dancing path, which is jaunty and jolly, but is just a path of murder.
Mm-hmm.
So it was entertaining and cute, but very homicidal, very ragey. And then Rocket and Baby Groot and Yondu escape at a little tiny ship thing, mining ship, I think they called it. And they have like a whole bunch of hops from one system to the next, which I assume are they're a little faster than light jumps from place to place to get to Ego's planet. And then they have that running joke about, you know, humans are only really good, you know, humanoid creatures are only good for like three jumps, and then it has really strange effects on them. And then there's this, you know, very Who's Framed Roger Rabbit kind of crazy cartoon animated antic bubblehead stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Which was funny for a couple seconds and then got old real quick.
Yeah. And like the first time I saw the big murdering scene, I thought it was kind of fun. You know, it's a montage of murder set to a snappy nostalgic song. But the second time around, it's so boring. It's just, it goes on way too long. And it's just a bunch of murdering. It's not even like fun murdering, like the end of Tombstone.
Well, and to what end? Why is he murdering all these people?
Well, they did commit mutiny. Well,
sure, but disable their ship and leave them stranded and take your ship and go. I don't know. Murdering them, I was going to say it seemed like overkill, but you know. But I'm
bummed. It's just kill.
Yeah. So Yondu and Rocket and Baby Groot hop and hop and hop. Do they take Kragan with them?
Mm-hmm.
He wants redeemed and throws himself at the mercy of Yondu, and there is some forgiveness and brings him back into the fold, and doesn't make him go out the airlock, which is good. And then that's when Nebula and Gamora have their fight, and then they discover after their fight they are in a bad, bad place because they are in a pile of bones.
to nobody's surprise.
Yeah. Well, the first time I saw this movie, I was like, holy hell. And then it's revealed what the bones are.
Yeah, it just gets worse. I mean, you may not have expected the giant pile of bones, but you knew Ego was a bad dude.
Yeah.
You knew it wasn't going to end well.
Yeah, but how long had he been a bad dude? Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of years. He'd had, that's quite a pile of dead children.
Yeah, that's pretty brutal.
It was pretty dark. So then it's determined that they have to fight to get Peter away from Ego. And Ego's not going to let go so easily. And they start a big, big brawl to try and break everything up. And their big thought is that they're going to blow up Ego's brain, which is the center of the planet. And then Peter will lose his immortality once he leaves the planet. But, you know, that's really, that's in everybody's interest anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So they have the reunion of Yondu, and Kraglin stays in the ship, but Yondu and Baby Groot and Rocket go down to the planet and help out in this big fight that happens. And they are enlisting the help of Mantis, who is kind of confessing that she was taken in by Ego, and she's just kind of his pet, as it were. But she's useful with her empathic abilities, because she can induce emotions in people. How exactly sleep is an emotion? I don't know.
She can calm you down to the point where you're so relaxed you just fall asleep.
Yeah, I guess.
And this is another example of the big fight scene with kind of the funny asides to it, like Rocket needing tape. That played a lot better the first time around than the second time. The second time, it just, again, I was bored and I was starting to look for my phone. Because it's just, at that point, it's just CGI versus CGI. And, you know, there's a Pac-Man callback, which is, it's just kind of funny. But yeah, otherwise it just went on too long. And, you know, the end was never in doubt.
Yeah.
The only surprising thing was that Yondu ends up dying.
In a redemptive but kind of melancholy way.
Mm-hmm. Which is also an excuse to bring back Sylvester Stallone, which did not add to the movie.
No, I would agree with that. Yeah. So, again, I agree with you about the attempts at humor and levity. It didn't do anything to lighten the movie in those parts. All it did was make me not like those parts.
I thought they were fine. They kind of gave me chuckled the first time around, but it's not the type of thing that really holds up to multiple viewings.
Plus, they also have that like that running gag between Drax and Mantis where he's just constantly insulting her and putting her down.
He's nagging her the whole time.
Yeah, because his species is, you know, we're literal people. Oh, you're dicks is what you are.
Yeah.
Your big race of just dicks. That's fine. They have those little touching moments where Yondu is like, you know, he's Peter's dad after all. And they have that cloyingly emotional, heart-tugging scene. And Yondu sacrifices himself for Peter. And then, of course, the Ravagers decide that they're going to give him his full honors in death for what he did, because they went and tell somebody somebody blabbed to the Ravagers what he did. So, but then you have, as it turns out, Aisha lurking around the corner.
Yeah. Also, what was Michelle Yeoh doing there?
You're going to have to remind me.
So the whole scene at the end with the Ravagers showing up, there's a bunch of cameos.
Oh, yeah.
Including Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah. I don't know.
Miley Cyrus.
Yeah. I really don't know. I got nothing.
This is weird.
But that whole thing was weird. I mean, yeah. Then, of course, the movie finally ends, and they, of course, claim there'll be a third one. And, of course, throughout the movie, you have this strange Stan Lee cameo.
Yeah.
And an appearance from David Hasselhoff.
That's always fun to see.
Ish. You know.
I loved Knight Rider when I was a kid.
Yes. Yes, you did.
Couldn't get enough of it. But the end credits were fun once you got to the dancing.
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
The song was pretty funny.
Yes. Let's see, James Gunn completed the screenplay in June of 2015. Then it was just Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, which he said it wasn't going to be, and then, surprise, it was. In a Facebook post, he later said that he wanted to use Sneepers, an alien race that first appeared in Marvel Comics in 64, as background characters in the film, but was advised against it by Marvel's legal department because the name was too similar to Snipur, an Icelandic word for clitoris.
That sounds made up.
Later, the Marvel legal team approved Sneepers for the film in part because of the media coverage Gunn's post received.
Yeah, I call shenanigans.
It was also reported that Matthew McConaughey had been turned down, had recently turned down the role of a villain in the film.
In this movie?
Yeah.
Was he supposed to be Ego?
I don't know. McConaughey felt he would have been an amendment in Volume 2, a colorful part made for another big-name actor. In December, Gunn said that he was corresponding with John C. Reilly about him reprising his role as Nova Corman, while Kurt Russell entered early talks to play Quill's father. After the death of David Bowie, Gunn said that there had been discussions for Bowie to appear in a number... Oh, in the film as a member of Yondu's original crew. Gunn also stated that he had completed the final draft of the script. Benicio del Toro, who portrayed the Collector in the first film, expressed interest in portraying the character again, despite Marvel not contacting him about the sequel.
Ouch.
Gunn explained the Collector, quote, just didn't fit into Volume 2.
Well, he shows up in other movies.
Yeah.
There's a rumor that the Collector is the brother or some other relative of Jeff Goldblum's character from Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, so.
Jeff Goldblum in that movie is delightful.
I don't dislike Jeff Goldblum, so.
He's really leaning into his goofy charm as he gets older.
Really? Like goofy charm like Cyndi Lauper and Peter Falk in Vibes with Jeff Goldblum, I believe?
I haven't seen that movie since I was a kid. More like lovable weirdo.
If you've seen any of him on Portland, yeah.
I have not.
Yeah, he's kind of crazily adorable in his kooky, goofy way. So let's see. That was almost probably 40 minutes of Guardians of the Galaxy talk. So I will slowly recap this into a. Didn't hate the movie. Didn't like it as much as the first one. Having seen this movie, the third one, if it comes out, well, I will probably not opt to see it in the theater. I will probably wait for it to come out. In an alternative downloadable and or streaming form at home. I would give this movie a B is probably pretty high, but I'll give it a B just because I didn't hate it. And it did bring characters back that I liked. And you're right, the rocket combat scenes are worth it. Because Rocket really got to rocket up the place. But B is about the highest I can go, and I think that's pretty generous.
That's definitely generous.
We'll throw it to you and ask you the Brother E question. So is it worth it?
It depends. if you loved the first movie, it's probably worth it. If you just thought the first movie was okay, it's not going to be worth it. But if you are a Kurt Russell completionist, which you should be, because he's tremendous in everything he does, Then this movie would be worth it because he's fun. He brings a gravitas to this movie that is unearned from the story, but it works just because it's him and he's always fun. He's even fun in very minor roles in the Fast and Furious movies. Yeah, this movie is fine. It's not great. It's not offensive. It's fine. I think. The characters, the team, is used to much greater effect in Avengers Infinity War. Because, you know, they're part of a bigger story. They're not the focus. And I think that's a great way to use them.
I'm reading about Guardians of the Galaxy 3. There's an update on February 6th of this year. They said the movie was on hold, but the president of Marvel Studios said that the movie will happen. As for where and when and how, he said only, quote, for a later time. The delay could even have an impact on Avengers Endgame, according to Dave Bautista. Guardians 3 is really up in the air, and I don't know what they're going to do with it, he told Digital Spy.
That's fine. If they never make it, I'm not going to be hugely disappointed. If they do make it, I'll see it eventually.
There are rumors abound that they will be forced to form a new team with a pick from Adam Warlock, who is the Sovereign Aisha's counterpart creation thing. Howard the Duck, Glenn Close, and they're saying Mantis will be back in the third one. Although Dave Bautista, I guess, keeps saying he's probably not coming back. Which would be, yeah, would be too bad.
Yeah, I don't believe anything of what you just read. None of that. None of that is true.
Yeah, I think that perhaps my guess is that Dave Bautista's contract is such that he probably doesn't have much option but to come back. But yeah. Who knows? Who knows if it even get made? Although it made $800 million, I would imagine Marvel's pretty interested in getting it made. Just a guess. Because there's a lot of completionists out there, like me, who will watch the third one.
Yeah, I don't know. If Marvel stays doing a lot of space movies set in space in the galaxy, then it doesn't even have to be a Guardians movie. You could throw them in a Captain Marvel sequel later on or something.
Let's see what my notes say now that we've already gone through it. Mantis is kind of a creepy character.
Yeah, she is.
Too much cutesy, not enough story. Poor abused baby Groot, I wrote.
Yeah, there was some real darkness sprinkled throughout this movie. Like the whole dynamic with the sisters, Gamora and Nebula, it's dark. Yeah, the scene where baby Groot just gets abused. Dark.
Hazed, man.
Yeah, that whole scene just makes you feel bad.
Peter is just a human battery and using the lyrics of the song Brandy as life lessons.
Speaking of human batteries, I rewatched Matrix recently because it's on Amazon Prime.
The first one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's still legitimately a good movie.
Yeah.
It holds up really well.
Don't watch the second or third one.
I'm in the middle of the second one. It's rough. It's rougher than I remember.
Uh-huh.
I remember not liking it.
But I watched the first one and I remember I came to it late, and I'm not necessarily a big Keanu Reeves fan. I gave it a chance and I watched it. I watched it by myself at home one weekend. I'm like, well, it wasn't a bad movie. It kind of gave me the creeps. Cause then I was like, it gives you that kind of mental dissonance where you're like, I don't want to think of this dystopian, like, I don't want to think about that, which I think was the intent of the movie. And then when I watched the second one, I'm like, it's like a Xerox copy that's faded. You know, it looks kind of like the first one, but you can tell that it's not quite the same thing. It's like, it's a little bit off. And then somebody photocopied it a third time. They photocopied the photocopy for the third movie. And then by then it was like, this doesn't even resemble the first one. You should have started from the original material. So I remember not liking the third one. And actually, I shouldn't say that. I remember not liking the second one. And I remember hating the third one.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty common reaction.
Yeah, I'm not breaking any new ground there.
No, it's a shame because I think they were victims of their own success, the Wachowskis, because the first one was so successful. They had such a blank check that they didn't have to edit themselves, you know, for the sake of a budget. And there's just so much shit in there. There's just so much mythology bullshit. That doesn't add to the movie.
No, and they add a lot. They try and build in a lot of backstory that's unnecessary. If you're already watching the movie, you've already accepted the premise. You've already signed on to the premise. You don't need the history. The history is irrelevant.
Yeah, and it's taking the metaphor of living in a world where that mirrors a computer system, you know, where reality is just a different type of program. It just beats you over the head with that metaphor over and over and over.
Yeah. I wanted to like them because I liked a lot of the actors. I liked a lot of the acting. But yeah, it just...
There's the one set piece towards the end of the second movie with the big fight on the freeway and the creepy twins.
Yes.
Which is really fantastic. That part holds up. But the rest of the movie, it's such a slog to sit through.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think I watched all three of them in a weekend back to back because I had watched the three of them kind of individually at some point. But I thought maybe I'm missing something. Maybe I should go back. And I thought, you know, I'm going to watch all three in a weekend and see if maybe I get something out of it. And, what I got out of it was I didn't like the second one too much and I hated the third one. So mission accomplished.
Yeah. I'm going to finish the second one and I'm going to watch the third one. I have to.
Completionist.
Yeah. It's just, they were so forgettable. I don't even remember what the plot of the third one is. I could not tell you what happens in the third movie.
Oh, wait, just wait.
There's a blind Neo in a chair battling a thing. Mm-hmm. That's what I remember.
See, he loses his eyes and then he uses his children to see through. No, that's Dune.
This Dune movie is going to be a real thing.
Yeah, I am.
Aquaman was just announced as being part of Dune.
What?
Jason Momoa. Momoa? He's going to be in Dune.
Who's he going to be in Dune?
I don't know.
Oh, man. I'm so excited.
Josh Brolin is in Dune, right?
Really? I don't know. I have intentionally not. I'm waiting for it. I'm trying not to invest any interest in it now because then I will just be all Dune all the time. So.
No.
Because I'm a stupid Dune fan. I am to Dune what some people are to Star Wars, where they will just, every time Lucas puts out another strange version of it, that everybody will just buy it. I'm that way with Dune. If they do anything with Dune, I'm going to buy it. It may be awful. I'm still going to buy it. I don't know. I can't help myself.
I like how you said some people. I feel like you just subtweeted right to my face.
No. Don't forget, I have a peer group of people that are nothing but like geeky nerds, so... It wasn't specific to you, because I don't think you've bought like five different copies of Star Wars, have you?
I decline to answer that question on the grounds that I may incriminate myself. Beep. Oh, are you kidding? I had the gold box of VHS tapes when they came out, and then I had the silver box of the widescreen VHS tapes when they came out. Those were the remastered ones with the new special effects. Yeah. DVDs. I don't have Blu-rays yet, and I don't have digital copies, but...
Wait for the Super Platinum Criterion Collection or whatever they make.
A couple weeks ago, I watched Solo. The Han Solo movie.
Okay, I haven't seen any of them.
Yeah. It was... I was expecting it to be bad, and it was not as bad as I was expecting.
It's quite the barometer you got there.
Yeah. It wasn't as good as Guardians of the Galaxy 2, but
oh, man.
It wasn't a complete trash fire.
All right. Well, and then you and I discussed earlier today, we were sending trailers back and forth. So you had sent me a link, or you had asked me about the movie yesterday.
Yeah. That trailer may have just come out yesterday.
Maybe. I had neither seen nor heard anything about it. So I saw the trailer. I was mildly impressed.
That movie just seems like a really fun, it's a fun premise. That's the type of, it's a type of trailer that just makes me think like, God, such a clever idea.
I thought so too. I thought, what a clever way to kind of reinvent the universe to be able to tell a story.
And what a way to shoehorn in just the certainty that you will have the best movie soundtrack of all time.
What I halfway through the trailer, though, I had a really dark moment of the soul, because I thought, huh, so I wonder if Mark David Chapman is going to show up in this movie.
Oh,
is that where you expected me to go?
No, I thought you were going to describe the dark realization that if that had happened to you, you wouldn't actually be able to recreate any of the music.
Well, that was my other fear. That was my other greatest fear. I was sitting in my office thinking, like, oh my God, if that happened to me, like, would I be able to remember all of the songs? Like, just out of my head? Like, okay. Like, the White Album, I could probably do no problem. Abbey Road, probably no problem. Some of the other albums, I would have a hard time getting all the songs off of them. Let alone all of the complete lyrics and all the music. So it was giving me a bit of agita. I was getting like some anxiety at work. Like, oh, I'm going to have to, I need to listen up. I need to get some more in my brain. Cause what would happen? What, that would be a travesty if suddenly, you know, that were to happen. Of course, you know, fantasy, but no, I had this horrific thought, like, what? Like, this is supposed to be this jaunty, jolly comedy, but, you know, Mark David Chapman. Wouldn't that be a weird, wouldn't that be just a dark right turn out of this movie?
So. Yeah, I guess we should say the premise of this movie, and it's a really fun trailer. You should go look at it. The premise of the movie is that this sort of struggling, failed musician and has some sort of accident.
He rides his bike into a vehicle in the middle of maybe a thunderstorm or something.
Yeah, something happens. There's like a worldwide power outage, and during that he gets run over. And when he wakes up, he finds that the Beatles never existed, and he is the only one that remembers the Beatles songs. So when he sings them to his friends, they look at him in amazement, because they think he wrote these awesome songs.
I think it's a good premise. I think it's a clever way to make a story. Also, I think it would lend itself to some pretty good comedy, as evidenced in the trailer where they're like, yeah, you know, it should be Hey Dude. which made me actually recoil from my screen a little bit.
Yeah, it's a good use of Ed Sheeran. It's really leaning into like how much people hate Ed Sheeran.
I love Ed Sheeran.
I do too. I like him.
I didn't like him at first. I admit I was biased, but after I listened to some more, I'm like, hey, this is pretty good. He's really good. That kid may be onto something. He might be a success.
I like anybody who's willing to put himself out there and do a bunch of cover songs. Like he's really creative with reimagining famous songs. I love that kind of stuff.
I love a good cover. There's nothing worse than a bad cover, though.
Did you watch the Grammys?
No.
There were some interesting things at the Grammys. Alicia Keys hosted, and she's amazing. And she had this little fun performance where she was kind of doing this lounge act kind of premise. And she was sitting between two pianos and playing them both at the same time. And she did like this medley of cover songs. You know, songs. The premise was songs she had wished she had written. And she is such a great singer that no matter what song she does, it sounds amazing.
She's pretty talented. I admire her a lot. Also, she's just so... I mean, I've seen her in other things, like little YouTube clips of... is it The Voice, I think she's on? Mm-hmm. She's awesome. She's just... I don't know. There's something about her that's... She seems... And of course, it's impossible to know from television, but... She comes off across very genuine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
her level of interest and her level of engagement doesn't seem like she's just there for the paycheck. It seems like she's doing exactly what she's always wanted to do, and now that she's successful, she can just do it even more.
Yes, that's why she's probably like a real life Bond villain.
she's just putting lemmings in the paper shredder.
Yeah. No, my girls have really been into the song No One recently.
Because it's mimicable.
Usually when they get on a kick and I have to either watch something or listen to something like 80 times a day for weeks on end, I start to get a little cranky about it, but not this time. I'm like, no, play it again. It's only been 12 times in a row. Do it. It's great.
It's Superman 3. And then the other trailer we traded back and forth was Arctic.
Yeah, that looks bleak.
With what Mads Mikkelsen, right? Did I say that right?
Yeah.
From Hannibal and other things. Yeah, that movie, which I think the premise is that... I'm not sure. There's some plane transport and he and a female... crash in the plane in the middle of nowhere in the Arctic, and he has to try and get them help, and it seems impossible, and she needs medical attention quickly, and for whatever reason she must get attention quickly, and so he decides to rescue them by packing out, and the trials and tribulations of what would be the Arctic and the shenanigans that happen. And it looks, it's almost like a version of Castaway, almost, I think.
Yeah, if Tom Hanks had to fight a bear.
Yeah, so.
I would bet on Mads Mikkelsen in that fight.
He would just eat its organs.
Yeah, if he was in The Revenant instead of Leo, then that movie would have been like 12 minutes long.
It opens tomorrow in Portland. It's not everywhere. I was looking at the addresses. It's not getting a wide release. So
yeah, I had never heard of it.
Nor had I, but, I don't even know how I stumbled across it this morning, but when I was looking, I was like, oh God. And then when I saw it, I was like, I have to share this. And then you messaged me and I was like, well, this is perfect timing. So, the trailer alone. And if you haven't, you should go seek it out. it looks very interesting. I'm so torn. I so want to go see it, and part of me doesn't want to sit in a theater with other people and have it spoiled by other people near me. And I know that sounds probably really egocentric of me, but it's a movie I want to experience, and I don't want other people ruining it for me.
I don't think you're going to have that problem.
You think I'm going to be? It's going to be me and Jesse.
Yes.
That's it.
Yes.
It's possible. Also, the only theater that has it is one that's downtown, which means I will have to go across downtown. And the only show that I even reasonably think I would want to go to is like the 10 o'clock show. And I'm too old to be out at 10 o'clock at night watching a movie. So, I don't know. We'll see.
You know, Mads Mikkelsen has a new movie out on Netflix.
Does he?
Polar.
Are you kidding?
Nope.
Polar and Arctic. What are the mm-hmm. odds?
They are very different movies.
What is Polar about?
Polar is about a hitman who works for a shadowy organization. Already I'm in. This is like my movie. And he's reached retirement age, so they're forcing him to retire. But he's a hitman. Hitmen don't get to retire. Yeah, it's very over the top. It's almost comic booky, and it's worth it just to get to this scene with the finger lasers.
Okay, I'm in.
It's not a great movie. But he is great in it.
Sometimes it's okay to watch a bad movie just for a good actor.
Because mm-hmm.
you want to support them. Not the movie. Support them.
Yeah.
The other announcement this week was, I don't know if you're a fan of the book Good Omens, but the BBC Amazon adaptation will be released May 31st.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that quite a bit.
Yeah. I'm so excited because the cast is crazy. Is it Benedict Cumberbatch that plays the devil or John Hamm? I can't remember. But anyway,
I hope they both do. I mean, dream casting for the devil, either one of them.
Yeah, I'm excited about Good Omens. So I was talking to my work wife about it, and she was like, "What? They're doing what? They're making what?" And I'm like, "Yeah." She's like, "Shut up." So that is coming to pass in May. I can't wait till May. May, hurry up, May, hurry up. Let's see. David Tennant is Crowley. Michael Sheen is Aziraphale.
There's like the Four Horsemen too, right?
Benedict Cumberbatch is Satan, which is kind of funny when you think about it.
Mm-hmm. He was a good Grinch.
John Hamm is Archangel Gabriel.
All right.
Derek Jacobi is Metatron. Who is Derek Jacobi? That name seems familiar to me.
Oh, you'd recognize him. He's been in tons of stuff. Oh,
yeah, I do recognize him. He has done tons of stuff. He was in he was Nicodemus in The Secret of Nim.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, he has done a crap ton of stuff.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I digress. Yeah. Good Omens. I'm really super excited about that. So I'm hoping that Amazon does what Amazon does and releases all of it. But I wonder that since it's a collaboration with the BBC, that if it's only going to be a serial weekly.
Did you watch the Jack Ryan Amazon series?
Not yet. It's in my list. It is waiting to go, but I haven't got there yet. We are negotiating to finish things. And so we have to finish one series before we can start another one because we have too many concurrent series.
That's fair.
Because right now we have, let's see, we're in, I think, the final season of The Good Wife, which there are 7 seasons, so we're there. I think we're on the 5th and final season of Covert Affairs. We are on the second season of The Grand Tour, which is the Top Gear spinoff.
Mm-hmm.
Not spinoff, but you know what I mean. The Top Gear reboot with the three boys from Top Gear. And then what else are we? There's that. Cougar Town, which I really adore, is a fun comedy to watch. And Battlestar Galactica. So.
The newer one or the older one?
The new one that your lovely wife got me for Christmas last year. Year before, but.
Nice.
That's a lot. Because you got me the sous vide for Christmas this year, so.
I heard on the last podcast that you've been enjoying that.
I very much so. I decadently used it for bacon the other day.
Nice.
And it made... It was indescribably amazing. So, because it rendered out what I can only approximate is the... I don't know how you say. I want to say the impurity of the bacon grease. Because when I baked it off to finish it, to crisp it, and the bacon grease that was left in my broiler pan was damn near clear, and I could have made biscuits with it. It was wonderful. So that's the way to go from now on. The recipe for the bacon in the sous vide, however, said you can put it in the sous vide and you can leave it there for up to 8 days. I thought,
oh,
8 days? Why would anybody do that? But I guess people do that. They put stuff in there for a couple days. I'm baffled by that, but I've also learned that there's some techniques about, there's an ice bath setting. So you put all your food in the ice bath so that your food is below 38 degrees. And then once it is over 38 degrees, it will turn on and cook to the right temperature. So ostensibly when you come home, your stuff is ready. Because it never overcooks, because it will never go over temperature. So especially with like a steak or a pork chop or something, you can leave it on your counter until you're ready for it to start cooking. And once it starts cooking, you're good to go. So many things.
If we don't get to Hobbs and Shaw, my head is literally going to burst open.
If we don't get to what?
Hobbs and Shaw.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wasn't trying to prolong your agony.
I'm pretty sure you were.
No, I'd actually completely forgotten. It was probably a self-preservation technique.
How can you? I've been trying to be very patient and not get started talking about it because I didn't want to like go on for about two hours.
No. Have we met? No.
No, I mean just on Hobbs and Shaw. I could talk about the trailer.
Take the lead. It's all yours. I will sit back and enjoy.
You watched it, right?
I did not watch it. Why would
You did not watch the trailer for Hobbs and Shaw?
No. What in your wildest imaginings would make you think I would watch that trailer?
This looks like it has the potential to be the second best movie ever made. There are so many things just in this like 2 minute trailer that, like I mentioned before, if a movie said it's about a hitman who is trying to retire, like I'm in. There's just like certain trigger words that I hear, and it doesn't matter. Like I am compelled. I'm going to watch the movie.
It's a 3 minute trailer. Okay, I'm watching it now.
Yeah. So if there's anything in the movie that's like we got to get the gang back together, like I'm gonna go watch that movie.
Is that Idris Elba? Please tell me it's not.
Yeah, Stringer Bell. Stringer Bell himself. He's the bad guy. It's got Vanessa Kirby from The Crown. She's in it. She's amazing. I love her. She was in the latest Mission Impossible movie. But just in this trailer alone, there's like a dozen different lines that if any of those single lines were in a trailer, I would immediately go see the movie. But there are so many. One of the first ones is... Vanessa Kirby, she goes, the mission has been compromised. Like, I'm in. That's amazing. The next one, you know, this is our target. He's a ghost. Of course I'm going to go see that movie. And it's the same movie. It's great. They describe The Rock as career lawman who always gets his guy. That's another movie I'm going to go see. We're going to need to operate outside the system. Yes. And then there's at one point where they string together three different lines. It's like an algorithm designed to compel me to go see the movie. like back to back. Rogue former MI6 agent. Doesn't play well with others. If we stand a chance against Brixton, Stringer Bell, you guys have to work together. It's amazing.
So I'm guessing there's no Vin Diesel in this?
No, there's no Vin Diesel.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And just when I think like this trailer is already giving me everything I need, you get Vanessa Kirby back to declare, you have no idea what we're dealing with. Oh, it's like this movie is speaking right to my soul. And then you get Stringer Bell himself saying just the iconic cliche, you want a war? You've got one. Of course, I'm going to go see this movie. This looks like this is going to be the best Fast and the Furious movie. I can't wait. This movie cannot come fast enough.
No pun intended.
I have watched this trailer more times than I watched the Creed 2 trailer. I've seen this trailer more times than my children have requested the Frozen 2 trailer.
Oh, God.
I was like, Frozen 2, that's a great idea. Let's watch Hobbs and Shaw again.
Oh, dear Lord.
If this movie isn't good, I'm going to sink into a deep, deep depression that I may never recover from. So you just watched it?
I did.
Does that not look amazing?
I have calibrated my amazing a little differently than you, I suspect. So I will say I can see how you would adore this movie.
I feel like they wrote this movie specifically for me.
For you. Somehow I would believe that you may be the prime demographic.
I think I am the demographic.
Yeah.
Well, that, there like you go. Just me.
they just focus grouped you. They just.
Yeah, well, I think they are expecting me to go see this movie 6 million times. I might do it.
Start as soon as possible, right? Yeah, I'm speechless. I really don't know what to say about that.
Has Jesse seen this trailer?
I don't know.
There's no way that you can watch this trailer. And at the end of it, you don't give a rebel yell and say, let's go.
Well, I've already proved you wrong, unfortunately. So,
well, you're just trying to play it cool so that people don't realize you're affected.
Of the things that I have been called in my life, cool has never been one of them, but I appreciate that.
I really hope this movie can live up to this trailer. Because there was another movie a few years ago that had an awesome trailer, Man of Steel. The first trailer for Man of Steel, I watched that and like just the trailer, I started to get choked up. It had like this really emotional monologue by Kevin Costner. And I was like, oh man, they're really going a different direction with this movie. And then the movie was not as promised by that trailer.
Was there some bait and switch or just the best parts of the movie were in the trailer?
It was certainly some magical editing. There was some of the themes from that trailer kind of sprinkled in the movie, but the theme of that trailer was how isolating and lonely it must be to grow up so different with these superpowers and shoulder the responsibility of what to do with them in a world that may fear you for having them. Like that's kind of an interesting take on the Superman myth. And it's told from the perspective of Superman's adopted father, you know, who's trying to protect his son. That's who Kevin Costner is in that movie.
He plays keel over?
Yeah, well, yeah, he dies. That's part of the Superman origin. His Pa Kent dies.
Always the orphans, man.
So that's the premise of that trailer. But then the movie opens with like 45 minutes on Krypton with Russell Crowe as Superman's real father, Kal-El. Jor-El. Kal-El? Jor-El.
I think Jor-El. I think Jor-El, Superman is Kal-El.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, with like weird Krypton dragons and stuff. You're like, what the fuck? And then you get a little bit of Superman growing up on Earth, and then Michael Shannon shows up as just this batshit crazy Zod.
Wow, that's a pull out of left field. I bet he was good though.
Michael Shannon was good, yeah.
Yeah. Well, but, I'm not saying the movie was good.
You should watch you should dig up the trailer, the original trailer. It's good. It choked me up.
the trailer, but not so much the movie.
No. I mean the movie was fine. I'll never watch it again.
That sounded very grudging.
It was very grudging.
Yeah. So boyfriend Jesse lately has been having to work Saturday nights. Which he goes to work at 1:30 and comes home at like 10 o'clock.
Has Jesse seen the Hobbs and Shaw trailer?
Not yet, I don't think.
What? You are not being a good boyfriend.
I will show him as soon as we're done here.
Oh, sorry, the other series you're watching.
Actually, I was watching it by myself because it was one of those... Like I needed something to watch, but I didn't want to watch something that was on our list together because I didn't want to get in trouble for watching something without him. I don't know if you have that in your household, but
we're way past that.
I didn't want to disrupt the couple's dumb of the sanctity of Netflix and Hulu and Prime. So I picked something I thought, I'm like, well, I'll watch this, but this is probably a little soap opera-y and probably not something he would want to watch. So I started watching Bodyguard, which is another BBC series.
Oh.
Which is really quite good.
We are about four episodes into it.
I think that's where I am. Because it took a left turn that I didn't expect. So...
Like every episode, there's another left turn.
Yeah, this one. Yeah, the episode I just watched was pretty like, oh shit. So yeah, No, I'm enjoying it. I was surprised.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe. You can even share films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast. We're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe. You can even share films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast. We're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brother Sanderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.